This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about the intersection of healthcare and law enforcement. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In 2009, medical sociologist Liz Chiarello was interviewing pharmacists across the country for a research project on emergency contraception. And even though she didn't bring this up, they all seem to have a different issue on their minds.
They really wanted to talk to me about opioids.
Overdose deaths from prescription opioid painkillers were on the rise and had been for years. People were clearly becoming addicted to these painkillers. The situation posed a complicated problem at the intersection of healthcare, public health, and law enforcement, a problem that nobody wanted to claim responsibility for.
So law enforcement said things like, you know, this is a problem that belongs to the medical boards. This is a problem of overprescribing. It's a problem having to do with pharmaceuticals. Really, the medical boards who are responsible for disciplining doctors, and they're the ones who should be dealing with this. And the healthcare providers, basically, they didn't say this exactly, but the idea is that both addiction and chronic pain are incompletely medicalized. So by that, I mean, doctors don't learn much about it in school. Those are not specialties that we tend to think of as a main part of mainstream medicine. And so both of these groups were kind of taking their hands off of this problem. And it wasn't until probably 2011, 2012 that you start to see them come together, more law enforcement and public health coming together to try to find collective solutions to this problem.
One of the proposed solutions was a tool called Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, or PDMP. It's a database that tracks prescriptions of controlled substances like morphine or oxycodone. Essentially, the PDMPs are supposed to flag doctors who prescribe opioids too freely or flag patients who visit several doctors to get new prescriptions. Physicians, pharmacists, law enforcement agents, and prosecutors have access to this information. In her new book, Policing Patients, Treatment and Surveillance on the Front Lines of the Opioid Crisis, Liz argues that these databases blur the lines between healthcare and law enforcement in ways that many patients are not aware of. I know for a fact that I've been prescribed opioids at least once or twice in my life after I had surgery, but I don't think anybody told me, like, hey, with this prescription, your information will be entered into this database, which it must have been.
It depends on what year it was. But yes, if it was in the last 10 or 15 years, yes, it probably was. But no, it's not like HIPAA. You don't have to sign something that says you've received the privacy notices or anything like that. It just goes into the database as a result of the pharmacy dispensing the medication to you.
Wow. I really don't think a lot of patients are aware of how that goes down.
No, they're not. The patients who are really aware of it are the patients who the PDMP has been used against. You know, the patients who pharmacists refuse to dispense to and doctors refuse to prescribe to, those are the people who are very aware that the PDMP exists. But otherwise, most people don't know. They don't really have necessarily a reason to know. But it does have these really tremendous privacy implications. And it really, I think, undermines the way that we usually think that medicine should work and the privacy protections that are associated with our health data.
You talk to a lot of law enforcement agents who investigate physicians who have come to the attention of law enforcement for their prescribing practices. How do they usually start paying attention to these doctors?
Law enforcement is really interesting, and federal law enforcement in particular, so the DEA, for example, the Drug Enforcement Administration, they get a call or they get a report, and then they open up a case and they start to investigate. And then once they do that, they have a number of tools at their disposal. So one of them is the PDMP data, which in most states they can only get access to if they can show that they're in the middle of an active investigation. So they get the report, they open the investigation, and then they get access to the PDMP data. And in some states, they have to ask whoever controls the PDMP, which is often the Board of Medicine, the Board of Pharmacy, a consumer protection agency. They have to ask them for the specific data that they want, like all of the prescriptions from this doctor or from this state to this state. But in other states, they have a login. So they're on the honor system. They just have to go in and get access to the information that they're looking for.
And what happens to doctors who get caught breaking the rules related to these prescriptions?
It depends on how serious the violation is. So doctors who overprescribe to one patient in one instance are probably not at risk. I mean, law enforcement is largely looking for patterns of behavior. But when things go really wrong, those doctors are arrested and prosecuted, and some of them spend 30 to 40 years in federal prison.
And there are some cases described in your book that were pretty egregious.
Yes. Some of them are really egregious. So doctors get to do a lot of things that the general public is not allowed to do. So their relationship to drugs is different than the relationship of the general public. But if doctors violate the stipulations under which they're allowed to provide these controlled medications, then they're extremely vulnerable, because you go from being a doctor in the eyes of the law to being a drug dealer in the eyes of the law. And once you make that switch, then all kinds of things that you do that are just kind of a normal part of providing medical care are part of, like, racketeering, essentially. So, you know, you send something through the mail, that's mail fraud. You know, you're billing through the mail, that's mail fraud. And so some of these cases are really egregious, but then the counts, you see all of these counts, but those get kind of added on because of the way that these cases get interpreted.
This must have had a very chilling effect on doctors, especially those who see a lot of patients with chronic pain.
Absolutely. I mean, doctors have had to figure out how to rework their practice to navigate a shifting legal territory. And so what a lot of doctors have done is they just refuse to provide opioids. And they feel like that protects them, but it doesn't necessarily protect their patients. So this is a space where the ethics of medicine and the care for the patient bump up against the fear of law enforcement.
What happens to patients who rely on opioid prescriptions to get through the day just because their chronic pain is so terrible?
It's really devastating what's happened to those patients. So the biggest driver is the CDC guidelines on using opioids to treat pain that came out in 2016. And the guidelines were just guidelines, but they've been treated as if they were law. And they make a lot of suggestions about what dosage patients should be on, when to initiate a dose. And it's really supposed to be for people who are newly on opioids. But by the time those came out, you know, there were people who had been on opioids for 20 years, who were in chronic pain, who are on very high doses of opioids. And there was a lot of pressure to taper those people down. The measurement is, it's called a morphine milligram equivalent, an MME. And the CDC guidelines say that people should be under 90. And a lot of people are on, you know, 300 or 350. And so a lot of doctors are concerned that that creates a red flag for them to law enforcement. And so they then try to cut those patients down, often very quickly and without consent. So you have patients who had been well managed on opioids who suddenly are not well managed, and, you know, they're thrust into pain, and then they can't find another doctor who's willing to prescribe for them. And so those patients are really suffering.
Pharmacists also have a lot of responsibility around this issue, to catch fraudulent prescriptions or to make sure patients are not getting too much of these medications and are using them for the intended purpose. The PDMP databases have become an important tool for them.
They start to engage in new routines where they're looking at patients in the PDMP more often. And then doing so shifts their relationship to both physicians and to law enforcement. So with physicians, you know, of course, doctors are on the top of the medical hierarchy and pharmacists are subordinated to them, as are nurses and everybody else. And so the PDMP actually gives pharmacists some information that they can use to push back on doctors. which upsets that traditional relationship, because they can say to the doctor, look, did you know that your patient has been going to four other doctors? And did you know that your patient just filled this exact prescription a week ago with somebody else? And a lot of times doctors don't know that. And so it upsets that power dynamic and gives pharmacists a little bit more power vis-a-vis doctors. But then it also changes their relationship to law enforcement. So in the past, you know, I would talk to pharmacists and they'd be like, oh, yeah, somebody came in with a fraudulent prescription and we called the cops and then, you know, they never came, and or they came and then it took up a lot of my time and nothing ever happened. And now they're a lot more proactive. So they'll call police and say, oh, you know, I looked this person up in the PDMP and it looks like this is what's happening. You might want to investigate them. So there are thicker connections now between pharmacists and law enforcement. And then they start to understand themselves in new ways. Their roles change too. I say, it sounds to me like you're policing patients. And they say, no, I'm actually helping. I'm helping patients by keeping track of their medications. And so what used to be a very clear distinction between medical gatekeeping and legal gatekeeping is now in their mind all the same thing.
Could you see the PDMPs being used in any other way? Could you see their use being expanded?
So it's interesting because I have made the argument that the PDMP is a law enforcement surveillance tool, and that even if it's in healthcare, it retains the vestiges of being a law enforcement surveillance tool. It doesn't change its colors just because it's put in a new space. And so one of the things that has changed with PDMPs is in a couple of states, they've started to put drug arrest data in the PDMP. So they're actually combining law enforcement data with healthcare data in the same system. But we can also certainly imagine a lot of other drugs being policed. I'm thinking about drugs used for reproductive health. I'm thinking about drugs used for gender-affirming care. Once you have this kind of system, it's very easy to add other drugs and to track other kinds of drugs. And so I think they've only just barely dipped their toes into what kinds of medications they're going to surveil.
Liz Chiarello is an associate professor of sociology at St. Louis University. Her new book is Policing Patients: Treatment and Surveillance on the Front Lines of the Opioid Crisis.